Good. Well, let's sit for a little bit. Let's sit. I'll get some instructions. Tonight, I'm going to give some instructions for the whole practice, for the whole, we're actually going to sit longer and have less, we're not going to have a walking period tonight. We're just going to sit and then we'll have some check-in afterwards, some parting words, things like that. Oh, this is, I keep reaching down to grab something. I wanted to get my phone so I could, because I don't have my bell with me. Okay, let's just take a moment. Notice the sounds that are around you. Taking a moment to notice sounds. Not your sound. It's just sound. Maybe distant sounds or up close sounds, harsh sounds or very quiet, rhythmical sounds. Can you notice how it just comes out of thin air, just arises? We just notice it. Maybe get a sense that the ears can do what ears do. We're just noticing. That's all we're doing is noticing. We're coming back to the noticing. And pick an object, it could be sound or sensation or the breath. Just pick one object that you can sense into. Could be the whole body just sitting here. I'm just going to notice that experience, the felt sense of it. And just keep coming back to that felt sense. Maybe as you're coming back to this felt sense, this awareness of the body sitting here, experiencing phenomena, sounds, breathing, changing sensations, thoughts coming, going, all movement. You might notice some of these sensations are pleasant or unpleasant. Some sensations are neither. It's just an experience, a sensation. Some thoughts are pleasant or unpleasant. Some are just random, neither pleasant or unpleasant. Maybe some of the sounds. You just notice it. And notice what the mind does if it doesn't like something. What's the felt sense of that unpleasantness? Just sitting here noticing, that's all. Noticing what the mind does if it feels something pleasant. If this moment feels pleasant, don't you want it to stay like this? See if you could just notice it. Well, maybe you notice a hindrance of sleepiness or aversion or restlessness. You just notice these mind states. It's okay. I'm just gonna calmly just abide with whatever's present. This is what we're practicing with. Maybe you could notice the unpleasantness of aversion or the not wanting. Maybe you can notice whether sleepiness is pleasant or unpleasant. Same with restlessness. What do you notice about it? You don't have to change it. You're practicing with it. The last skill here is just noticing the thinking mind, emotions and thoughts. And if you notice that thinking mind, maybe you could just give it a note. Oh, that's planning. Oh, that's rehearsing. That's worrying. That's fantasy. Fantasy. I see daydreaming. See if you can notice that you're sitting and the mind is cognizing, planning, rehearsing, daydreaming, arguing, complaining, whatever the mind is doing, you're just sitting here noticing the mind. So whatever arises, we're just going to let it be. Let go of it having to be a certain way. Let this experience just be the way it is. This is our practice for this evening. Well, we're kind of back here now. All right, everybody. Sorry about that. What I was saying was that I don't really have anything else I can teach you, that you really do know how to meditate and all the hoopla and all the stuff, all the thoughts of what is meditation. It's just this. And even all the doubts you have about it can't just be this. It is just this. Whatever it is that you're doubting, there's nothing more to it. It's not some cure, some fix-all thing that makes everything better. But yet, you all have experienced this aspect of meditation that does seem to make things better, or at least, I mean, I can experience things in a better way. We would call it better. It's very strange in that way. So this practice is there's something to it, but it's not something that you can do yourself. It's something that we simply train the mind to access. And fundamentally, the Buddha said there are four ways in which we can establish mindfulness. And in the establishment of mindfulness, we can actually steady the mind, build a degree of concentration, and that concentration brings with it a whole host of qualities that help us feel like we can do it. It gives us a sense of resilience. It gives us a sense of inner strength and courage, a sense of peacefulness and stillness and kindness. All of that shows up simply because we have learned how to still the mind. It's not anything bigger than that. Just we've learned how to still the mind. That stilling of the mind is called, it's when the mind gets gathered. And when the mind gets gathered and it gets unified and it gets concentrated, it sees through its own delusion. It doesn't see through its delusion when it is scattered and moving about and running here and there. But when it gets gathered and stilled, it sees through its own delusion. And we can begin to see where we get trapped, where our habits are, the difference between our thoughts about things and reality. So basically, many teachers have said, if you practice a little, then you're going to get a little bit of this. Oh, now you want to ring. It's like, okay, I'll pay you. Jeez. Now you want to ring. So some teachers say, you know, if you practice a little, then you're going to get a little bit of these qualities, this sense of inner strength and resilience and stilling of the mind. And if you've practiced a fair amount, you'd get a fair amount of that. But if you practice a lot, then over time, you get a lot of relief from the mind's mental chatter. That relief doesn't come from meditation. It comes from the practice of meditation. And the more we practice, it's like learning the piano. It's like learning a bike, a new job, anything. The more we do it, the better we get at it. So I think what I wanted to talk about today, I think right before the bell went off, I was saying that what you've learned is, one, the four places where the Buddha said you can establish mindfulness. You can establish mindfulness in the body, meaning that any sense door in your body is always available to practice and establish a degree of mindfulness just by paying attention, like we did at the beginning of the sit, to just sound or just the sensations or just smelling or tasting or whatever's happening. You just turn your attention to that experience of the body. And anytime you turn your experience away from thought to the body, you are going to begin to experience mindfulness. And the more often you do that, the more gathered the mind gets, the more unified the mind gets. Just this constant returning to the experience of the body. But you could also return your attentions to the felt sense of what are called the feeling tones. It's the second foundation of mindfulness. This felt sense of pleasant, unpleasant, or neither. And in that experience, you could turn your attention towards this feeling tone and just experience the moment by its quality. I can remember sometimes asking myself, why does this feel unpleasant and that feels pleasant? Or something, why? Who says that this is unpleasant or that this is pleasant? What happens to the people who don't like this or the opposite of me? All of that interest in the feeling tones establishes a degree of mindfulness. We are all afraid of the mind. We want to somehow get that mind under control. But the Buddha was pointing to mind as a way to establish mindfulness. We are humans. We are constantly cognizing, thinking about something. And you could turn your attention to noticing the distinction between your thoughts about and the actual direct experience of something, or the noting of what kind of thinking is going on, and you can find yourself being quite mindful, less caught up in the thinking and more mindful about it. And then finally, this last foundation or establishment of mindfulness is when you start paying attention to the hindrances or the Brahmaviharas in this way of beginning to pay attention to the understanding, the relationship that you're having with the present moment. Are you pushing against it? Are you averse to it? Are you bored with it? Are you sleepy, restless, worried? Are you in the future? Are you in the past? Is it all about me, 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 me? All of that relational stuff, you could turn your attention to actually noticing that rather than getting caught up in acting out of all of that. So the more we establish mindfulness in one of these four categories, then the more gathered the mind becomes, the more settled it becomes, the less reactive it is. And it's less reactive, like some of you were mentioning, it's not that the mind states that would normally cause reactivity has to go away, but we have a more settled understanding of watching it. And that's what makes us less reactive, because we pay more attention to it than we do just responding. So I think what all of this is about is what I said at the beginning when we were doing the question and answer. I think this whole thing of practice centers around learning how, instead of learning how to stay with something, be interested in something because I am trying to understand it, figure it out,
evaluate it, analyze it, compare it to something else, instead of all of that cognizing way to create interest in the present moment. We are creating interest by having one simple intention to stay with this no matter what arises for the duration of my practice period. So I'm going to practice for 20 minutes. Then for 20 minutes, whatever arises, I'm not going to freak out about it. I'm going to practice with that. That's what my practice is. And the more you let the actual practice period set the discipline or set the boundaries for your practice, and less about how you feel on the inside or how you feel through that practice period, the more you're going to find something begins to happen. And I think that thing that begins to happen is we begin to turn inward. It's the turning inward that we're really trying to do. We spend our lives referencing the world. We spend our lives referencing the world from outward. Everything is external. So everything we do is a somehow relating to this external, external, external. So if the weather's nice, we feel good on the internal. But if the weather's ugly, we feel bad on the internal. And everything seems to be controlled by what's going on externally. It's so much so that we are almost, I would say, barely afraid of what's in the internal. As if somehow, if I connected to this internal, I might see something or experience something I don't like. So we just stay projecting in the external. And this isn't just extroverts, because introverts are equally external. They may not be saying anything, and they may find more solace by themselves, but the mind is spinning about the external, 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 external. And all of this practice of meditation, what it's doing is getting us to turn our gaze internal, internal. So we're making a reference of what's going on based on this internal understanding. And that internal understanding is far wiser than the external assumptions that we live through. This internal way of being with the moment, we can learn, oh, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on besides just my anxiety, as Brittany said, way more stuff going on. Or you can all of a sudden notice that I can be with something unpleasant. I don't like it. I realize I don't like it, but it's not the end of the world. I don't have to do anything about it. And I can let pleasant go. I don't have to hold on to it, because there's a trust here that another sit, pleasant will come back. So there's a way in which this turning inward helps us really begin to understand the truth about existence. And it is not so much based on the assumptions our thinking mind places on the world. That's why this is difficult, because turning inward is not a skill that we were taught when we were children. I mean, in some respects, many of the kids I know now, even my granddaughter, her grandma's a Buddhist, so I'm always like, okay, let's sit down and let's figure out what's going on here. Like, let's take a moment. Even her timeout chair is not even a timeout chair where she's got to stay there 10 minutes. She doesn't have to stay there at all. She just has to turn inward and see if she can calm herself down. And as soon as she understands that, she can get up. And so it's amazing. At first she used to fight it. And now she'll go to her timeout chair. She'll sit down and she'll be like, I need a moment. I just need a moment to calm down. So I'm like, oh, that's good. She'll just go sit down. And that kind of learning, the wisdom in that, is what many, many, many children are going to carry into our lives. That's going to have a profound effect on how we relate to each other. But in the interim, all of us adults, we have to learn the skill that we weren't always taught when we were kids. In fact, most of us weren't taught it at all. This is this turning inward is probably the main thing that you are learning. Everything you want to do in practice is turning inward. The second thing you're learning is the truth about silence. Not silence as in I'm not talking, but I'm talking about there is a degree of silence, even in chaos, that's very palpable. It's very noticeable. It's an experience of the present moment, because in order for us to be in the past or the future, the mind has to create big stories and interpretations and assumptions and big, huge world it creates based on past or future. But when we're actually in the present moment, it's like the sound of, sounds when we're sitting. Even though I hear sound, it feels silent. Even though I feel sensation, it feels still. It doesn't feel loud. And even if I'm in my mind and the mind is churning, if I can find a way to get into the present moment, the here and nowness of right here, the direct experience of this, I can begin to experience a degree of silence that's different than the silence I know. Somehow, hearing sound without all the labels makes the sound sound silent. Sometimes sensations, without all my commentary about what it is, what's going on, what's going to happen, the silence becomes the lessening of attention given to the thinking mind. And that thinking mind begins to move to the background. It's a different world when we experience our sense doors based on silence rather than based on the storylines that our minds begin to talk about whenever we experience any sense door. And then the last thing is stillness. So we're turning inward, we're experiencing silence, and we're experiencing stillness. And stillness and silence are not the same thing. Stillness is a quality of patience and a capacity to be with experience just as it is. And this is not something that we automatically know. It's something that we learn that we can actually experience, and we don't actually have to push against reality all the time. The shocking thing about stillness, I want to share this one story
the student I had. I always share this with students because it's so palpable of what's possible when we practice. But he was very, 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 and he knows that I share this all the time, but he was very, very anti-meditation. I'm not going to meditate. Don't even ask me to meditate. I'm not meditating. No, 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 no. So I said, okay, you don't have to meditate. All you have to do is notice whatever's happening. And every time we'd get together, I'd ask him during his practice meeting, what did you notice? He's like, I don't know. I was noticing that, you know, I noticed the rain. I noticed this. This is flippant stuff. I'm like, no, no, no. You got to get in there and you got to notice the nuance of what's going on. Don't just tell me, oh, I did this thing, blah, blah, blah. You tell me the whole thing. This is important. You got to pay attention. There's all this stuff going on. You got to pay attention. You got to notice it. And you got to come back and report the details of what you noticed. And I would get picky, like, you know, well, what were your feet feeling like when you were standing there? And he's like, well, I don't know. Feeling like feet. I don't know. Like, you got to notice these things. This is important. You got to notice it every time. So this probably went on about 6 months. And then he comes to me. He says, I had this terrible weekend. So much anxiety. He's shifting this medication. It was terrible. He had this really bad reaction. And he was like over the top with anxiety. I'm like, oh my God. What happened? How did you deal with it? He's like, you know, I just kept hearing you in my mind saying, you got to watch this. This is important. You got to pay attention. Something could be happening here. You got to pay attention. And I said, well, what did you notice? And he said, it went away. I mean, that is what he noticed. That even though he had all this anxiety and the medication was clearly off, he understood that this anxiety goes away, that it was not permanent. And that understanding is what stillness is. Stillness is the only way we can learn this experience of impermanence. Because if we're always running, trying to get something, fix it, don't let this happen. I got to make this. I got to do this. I got to rearrange that. If we're always doing that, then we never know that life comes and goes in its own time. And that we don't actually have to fix 90% of what we think we have to fix. So we have to learn how to be still with what's happening and allow the natural unfolding of impermanence work its way through. It is the natural phenomena that impermanence is going to happen. And when we learn that things unfold in their own time, then we can decide for ourselves through wisdom and discernment, what do I actually want to put my energy in moving and getting involved with, and what can I let rest on its own instead of chasing after everything that the mind deems important. So that's what I want to leave you with. Your homework for this month, for this week is, I have an extra handout. I have this little tiny tablet, so I wasn't able to put it on in a Google Doc, but I will
send it to Carol, and then Carol will send it to everybody in the morning. But you have two handouts. One is just the basic instructions for how to let go and, you know, what's the whole point of letting go? What does that mean? And allowing things to be as they are. And then the other one is, when I started doing beginning classes, I realized that it would be better to have all of the skills that you're learning in a framework, right? Just these are all these skills you're learning, but it's not just the skills. It's a commitment to practice. It is a paying attention to your basic way of being with practice, letting go of a lot of kind of judgments about yourself. And so the second document you're going to get is a handout that kind of helps you understand how to frame everything that you're embarking with. You know, some of you guys have been practicing for a while, but still there's a sense of at the end of a beginning class that you're starting off, it feels fresh, like, oh, I'm starting over again. Okay, I'm really committed this time. And so there's the handout shows you how to create that sense of I guess recommitment to the practice, or commitment to the practice, and discipline, and what all it takes. And so that's pretty much it. Saturday is our day of mindfulness. I hope you are planning on going. I really believe you'll see it's like, all right, now I think I can do this. I think I can do it. Especially if you've never spent a day meditating. But we will spend a day doing it, and it'll go by fairly quick. It does not take a long time. Maybe some of the sits might feel like they're going a little slow, but, you know, I usually talk through them a little bit and help move us along a little bit. But it's usually quite enjoyable. So let me see if there's any questions. Let me see if anybody has any kind of questions you want to see about. We're going to talk more about how to take this home, how to keep it, so to speak, over Saturday. But if you have any questions and you're not going to Saturday, you can bring those up here. I just want to see how you're doing. Yeah, Jessica.
Hi, I was just wondering, if we're not able to come to all of Saturday, can we come to part of it, or how would that work without disrupting it?
Mm-hmm. You can come to part. I think it's not the same when you're in your own house. So I was going to say that if you came to the afternoon, it would be different, but it won't matter because we won't be in the same room with you. So it won't matter what's going on. So, yeah, you can come to either parts of it. Stay as long as you want. So are we good? Are we feeling like we can do this? Couple of things I do want to share with you. You need a Sangha. You can't do this. Part of what made this doable is this sense of Sangha, coming every week and meeting with people. So at Seattle Insight, we have a Sunday morning sit it used to be for kids. It was a family sit. So we would get together and we had children showing up. And so we changed it a little bit so that we could accommodate kids. So the sits are usually guided. They're 25 minutes. Well, no, the sits are guided. They're 25 minutes. We do a shorter Dhamma talk. And then we, usually do some breakouts where you can talk to other people and then come back and kind of share how it was. It's a shorter sit period. It's only an hour and a half on Sunday mornings. And so if that is a time that you can meet regularly, then you should show up for Sunday mornings and sit. If you want, and we have a traditional meditation sit that happens on Monday nights. That is a 40-minute silent meditation. We don't do instructions on that night. You all can do that sit. So yes, you don't have to have any special, no more training as to whether or not you could come and sit on that 40-minute sit. You can. And then we give a traditional Dhamma talk some nights and alternate between a traditional Dhamma talk, which is usually about 45 minutes, and discussions about whatever we're talking about. That's usually based in a theme. We pick Tim and I, who's the other guiding teacher. We pick a theme each year, and then we spend the whole year practicing with it as a Sangha. I have a Thursday night group. We meet every Thursday night. It's usually on Capitol Hill, but all of these are all online right now. And I'm not sure which ones will go. I'm sure the Monday night will go back to being in person when we can. I'm not sure about the Thursday night, and I'm not sure about the Sunday night. For those of you that are under 40, there is an under 40 sit that meets twice a month. I'm not sure. Susan, do you know if that meets on Sunday?
I don't know, but I can go and find out right now.
Okay. And then just let me know.
Yeah.
So if you're under 40, then or 40-ish, that's a great sit. It's led by Carrie Peterson. We have classes that we offer. You can go to any of the classes that you want. There's no practice level that you have to be at a certain level of practice in order to be in it. I do offer an intensive course that has a practice level to it, but it's really based on commitment. And so if you ever wanted to do an intensive course, you could also just talk to me about that. We have what are called local Dharma leaders, which are senior students, and they offer a class on varying Buddhist wisdom and practices and information about practice. And so you're always welcome to go to that. I mean, there's just, I'm giving you a wide variety of things. If you're a person of color, Spirit Rock, which is a retreat center down in California, they do a BIPOC sit with about 80 people that show up every Sunday morning at 9 o'clock. You can always get online to go register for that sit, and you could sit there. And when we're online, we can sit all, there are all kinds of sits all over the country, and you can find retreats, sits, it doesn't matter. I mean, there's so much possibility here that is completely accessible given all our stay-at-home orders and all this online stuff. So there's a lot out there now that you can access. Did you get it?
I found out about the under 40 group, and you can find all of this on the SIMS events page. The second and fourth Wednesday, second and fourth Wednesday, 7 to 8:30. There's a Zoom link on that.
Right.
Either the calendar, You have a talk on Friday night too, Tweri.
So on Friday night, we're going to talk about the election and how to hold everything that's going on. It's just a large round table. You could think of it that way. And it's going to be a, probably a sit. And then we're just going to open and kind of share how we're doing. That's going to be Friday night. Tim and I are going to do that. And so there's just all these opportunities to practice. That's one reason why I want you to come to the Day of Mindfulness, because I want you to see that, yes, you can practice. You can practice with this sitting for extended periods of time, and it's not impossible. And you'll begin to see that you can strengthen your practice, and that's what gives you the courage to sign up for some of these retreats and all the resources that are out there right now. All right. All right, good people. Well, it's been great to be with you. I hope to see you on Saturday. If not, I trust that I will see you on at some sangha somewhere. We'll be sitting together because this is your life. I guess I can tell you now, we should probably tell people this at the beginning, but we don't tell them to the end. But once you have learned to notice and return and opened up this awareness box, you kind of like have opened Pandora's box. You can't put it back in. So you might as well just find a sangha and settle in, because you won't be able to turn off what you've already learned. It's quite rich that way. All right.
And so
yes, somebody says something.
I said, that's awful.
Yeah. I could be the one to tell you now, but I'm giving you a heads up. So I want to thank Susan for being such a gracious host and always signing on first and getting us all started. Thank you so much, Susan.
Thank you. Remove the check by my name, though.
That's right.
That was kind of, yeah. Thank you, Carol, for your text.
Thank you also. Huh?
Oh, sorry. I said thank you as well for your tech skills in addition to the master.
Ah, you're welcome. No problem. Carol, I want to thank you, our registrar. It was a little hectic there at the beginning, but you held in there and kept everything together, and do really, really appreciate all the work that you did to, for the class. And everybody's going to get a follow-up email later on, so you can just become part of the Sims family if you want to. And I look forward to seeing you just as practitioners together. All right.
Yay.
Thank you so much.